Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Claire Lyons Devon, and you are listening to the International Black Summit Talk Show Network. Tonight, my co-host is Mr. Glenn Greenwich out of New York City. How you doing, Glenn?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Oh, gosh, just fabulous. Weathering the storm.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm really looking forward to tonight's show. I'm excited about this whole topic of educating our youth, and I think we've got some superb guests, so I'm looking forward to that conversation.
I am as well. And I'd like to let our listeners know that the IBS Talk Show, we air every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And for those of you who are new to the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, we have come together for a summit the very first weekend in August of every year since 1991. And this year in 2010, it was our 20th year reunion. We had a phenomenal event in Baltimore, Maryland, and we are looking forward to another weekend coming up. Is it this weekend coming up, the October 2nd?
This weekend, yes. This weekend coming up.
We will be back in Baltimore for our leadership conference. So if you're in the Baltimore area, definitely go to our website. You can find the information there. It's blacksummit.org, and join us. So we have participants from around the world who have found the International Black Summit to be an empowering experience, an experience that fosters personal breakthroughs, an experience that creates energizing and lasting relationships, and an experience that promotes community transformation. So I'd like to invite everyone, participants old and new, to join us in Baltimore this weekend coming up, and put the summit on your calendar for 2011. It, like I said, it's always that first weekend in August, and you can go to our website, blacksummit.org, to get more information about the International Black Summit. Wow, Glenn, we have a phenomenal show tonight, and I guess we'll start off with the purpose of the International Black Summit. Can you say a little bit about that?
Well, the purpose of the International Black Summit is really to for people to get in touch with themselves and their community, to really look to see what their purpose is in life and what is their purpose as it fits into their vision.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to share with our listeners what your vision is?
Yes, my vision is health, wealth, and abundance available for all. So that's what I'm standing for, that's what I'm committed to, and it's something that I can't do by myself, so I have to include other people into that conversation in order to fulfill on my vision.
Awesome. Awesome. As Glenn said, the purpose of the International Black Summit is for participants to realize their vision in the community and in the world. And it's really a gathering of people of Black African descent, and we come from various backgrounds, various countries, various lifestyles, various opinions and views, and we come together and we celebrate the declaration that I'm going to share with you in a moment. We had our first summit in 1991 in Atlanta, Georgia, and this declaration was created at that time, and I think that the declaration really embodies the spirit and the charge of the International Black Summit. So, the declaration of the International Black Summit: we declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. And this declaration statement was created at our first formal summit event, which happened in Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th in 1991. And it continues to present itself today in this moment in me, in our guests, and all over the world. So I'd like to welcome you. I'd like to welcome our guests for this evening, and I'm going to go back to our switchboard. We have some phenomenal people who are pioneers or have been pioneers and innovators in education and who've been taking on new approaches and new ways of realizing their vision in the educational system across the United States. So I guess we'll start off with Ms. Greta. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Could you share with our listeners where you're from and a little bit about your background?
Okay. I'm from Chicago, and my educational experience is primarily in the city of Chicago. And outside of Chicago, in Africa, basically. And I've approached education through a cultural framework because I believe that regardless of what ethnicity the children are that sit in front of a teacher, that it's important for an educator to know that culture, to be able to promote that culture, to develop the self-esteem and self-empowerment of the child. So that's basically what I'm about.
Awesome. And I understand. I just want to acknowledge you as an educator. It's not an easy profession these days. Our youth are very challenging. And they have lots of energy and very positive and strong wills.
Mm-hmm.
And I applaud anyone who is in the position of educating our young people. It's a very important position, you know, in our community. And I just want to acknowledge you for who you've been. And we're going to get into a little bit more detail about what you've been doing.
Okay.
And also acknowledge you for what you've done. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. So share with our listeners, you had an opportunity to go to Africa.
Well, I went to Africa. Well, let me say this. I just retired on June 30th of this year.
Well, congratulations.
So, oh, thank you. But so it's been 42 years. In the field of education.
Wow.
Yeah. I said that, too, after I counted how many years I had been. It went so fast, I didn't realize it was 42. But some of the experiences I've had entailed going to Africa. I went to Africa in the Peace Corps.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, which was a good way to go because the Peace Corps gave me an opportunity to be immersed in the culture of the people. Because later on, as I stayed there, I found other women, African-American women, who had come to Liberia and Sierra Leone, and they were living as Americans versus myself, who was living you know, with the people in the villages and traveling by foot and so forth. So I was exposed immensely to the culture. I married my first husband, who died there, who was Mandingo, the Mekfori section in Guinea. Mm-hmm. So by being married to him, he was really an excellent teacher for me, because he really taught me about the culture. So I actually lived as an African woman instead of living as an African-American woman in an African and an American setting within that country, within both countries. So that I consider to be a wonderful privilege. I did not continue in the Peace Corps. I stayed there about, my stint was a year and a half. We were supposed to stay 2 years, and I left Sierra Leone and left the Peace Corps. So my entire stay in Africa was 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I taught in the indigenous school system in Sierra Leone, and I trained teachers to be discovery science trainers of other teachers. So that was my job there. And then later on, when I moved to Liberia, it was suggested to me to move to the American Cooperative School by the Liberian officials in education at that time. So that experience exposed me to children all around the world. Like Haile Selassie's nieces were some of my students, and different people like that. So that gave me an international flavor, and also gave me some extended educational experience in working in individualized education for children, looking at children as individuals inside your classroom instead of looking at them as you know, one lump sum of, okay, this is what we're going to learn today, and everybody does it the same way and does it at the same time. So that extended my experience there. And then I returned back to the United States. I came back as a substitute teacher because my principal, that was the principal at the time that I took a leave of absence, wanted me back, and I was glad for that. Moving around in Chicago as a substitute teacher gave me the opportunity to see all the different types of classrooms and to see teachers teaching in different ways and so forth. And it also allowed me to see more of the needs of the children. And then from there I went into the Catholic school system. And I became a unit leader there, which is like an administrator like I was in Africa, and also an assistant principal there. And so I worked in that. I've worked in a high school as a reading specialist. I've, let's see, what else? I've worked for a major publishing company and developed reading and math software, educational software. And from there, I came to be mentored by Dr. Sikoni Karanja, who really is my main mentor for moving me into a total cultural perspective. I remember when he hired me, he says, well, Sister Chamberlain, I know you're going to write this great curriculum. And I told him, I said, I don't think I could write a curriculum just dealing with African-centeredness. And he said, of course you can. You lived in Africa. And I said, but in Africa, there's no conceptualization of African-centeredness. It's all European. You know, in Sierra Leone, it was the British system. And, you know, Liberia was the American system. So to really have a an African system unto itself approaching education for children. It wasn't there. So he began to train me. And when I would meet with him, he'd always ask me, he said, what book have you read this week? So he really, really mentored me. And his organization is still in existence here in Chicago, Centers for New Horizons. So, yeah, he was my main person.
That's pretty awesome. So it sounds like the sum total of all of your experiences led you to the cultural education perspective. And, you know, share with our listeners a little bit about what that looked like and how you implemented that in the Chicago school system while you were there.
Well, when I finally got back to the Chicago public school system, I went back as a librarian.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that I discovered being a librarian was a wonderful experience for me because it exposed me to all of the children in the entire school,
mm-hmm.
which meant that I could influence the way children thought about their culture, thought about themselves. And so I decided to stay as a librarian, and I did that all the way up until the point in time when I when I retired, although I've done other things along the way with that, simultaneously with that. But I found that children, for instance, and this happened a while ago, I remember going, when I was working, I had lost part of my position as a librarian, and I was sent to another school, and they made me the music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember asking the children, tell me, who do you think you are? Who are you? And I remember this young man raised his hand, and I called on him, and he said, I'm a nigger. And I said, you are? And he said, yes. He says, I'm a nigger. That's all I am, and that's all I can ever be.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so profound for me because he was only 12. And you've already conceptualized that,
wow.
You know.
Yeah.
So what does that say? You know, what does that say for how we educate our children? Later on, I had to go back to that school again, but this time I went back to the school as a librarian. And I saw this young lady sitting in front of me, and I said, you look so familiar to me. Did I teach some member of your family? And she said, oh, yes, you taught my brother. And she reminded me who he was. I said, oh, I remember. I said, where is he? And she said, well, at this moment, I think he's on death row.
Wow.
In a state prison because he had killed somebody.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
So that is, that's heart-wrenching. You know, very heart-wrenching.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, I've had some of my students who have been shot, and now they're paralyzed. They can't walk because of the violence that they were exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along the line, I became a gang interventionist as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I became exposed more and more to children who some of them you would classify as being conduct disordered and so forth. But to me, they were very caring children because they had a sensitivity within inside of themselves. So a goal for me has been to really promote a child's self-image, just child self-esteem, because then they don't have to wind up on death row in a prison. Or they don't have to wind up paraplegic, that type of thing. So it's been a journey for me.
Right. What exactly was the system like? What was it that you did differently at that time? Like, how did you introduce this whole cultural perspective inside of the curriculum?
Well, I want to say it was challenging, to say the least, because in some cases I was criticized a great deal.
Well, first, tell our listeners what actually it was that you did, so they can kind of have a perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. Like, for instance, the last school that I was at, I spent 2 years in the library talking about the civil rights movement. And we studied that from kindergarten all the way up to eighth grade. They were taught people. They were taught about events. I used films to show them, to illustrate what was going on in the civil rights movement. Like, we looked at Ruby Bridges film, a Disney film about Ruby Bridges. We talked about school, segregation, school desegregation. My kids learned about the Ku Klux Klan, what was representative of that. And it was tailored to fit each grade level. Like, what I taught the eighth graders was not necessarily the same thing I would teach a first grader, but they got some parts of it. Like, 1 year, Fred Hampton Jr. came to our school, and he was invited. I invited him with a parent who was very into teaching, exposing the children more and more to their culture. So he came and spoke to the children. I did a whole unit from sixth grade to eighth grade studying the Black Panther Party. So it was different things like that. We studied about Kemet. They learned that Egypt was not a white civilization, but was a black civilization. I'd exposed them to Kiswahili. We did Kwanzaa celebrations every year. They learned the music. They learned the meaning of it. Every time you would come into the library, you'd have to say the Black Pledge and sing Inkosi Kelele, you know, and they would do it in Zulu. They understood the meaning of it in English. So that was some of the things that we did then. Mm-hmm.
Sister Greta, what kind of, in learning those things, could you see the difference in terms of how they, how the self-esteem was an impact?
Well, yes, because let me go back a ways first, and then I'll bring it back up to where the school that I just left. I was called by one of the city colleges here in Chicago to run a summer learning camp. And because of the tutelage under Dr. Jacob Carruthers, I was really into Kemet. So the whole summer learning camp, which only had 15 children in it, we studied about Kemet. We did a final project and displayed it in the City College, and teachers came from all over the city to visit it. They made mummies. They made jewelry. They did all kinds of things with about that subject area. So the administrators were so pleased with the work that the children had done that they decided, let's open it up and let's make it bigger. So the next summer, we had about 250, 260 students there. Now, the reason why I've gone back to that is because we ran it in such a way that the morning hours, the children would start at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we would do study things, like they learned French, they learned Spanish. But when they learned the French and they learned the Spanish, it was always coming from an African-centered perspective. And so they learned math, they learned literature. So we did all the basic subjects, but everything was coming from an African-centered perspective. All of the teachers that I chose to go up in there were hired because they shared African-centeredness, and they were of the same belief system that I was. In the afternoon, after the children had lunch, because the children stayed until 5, so we ran the program from 8 o'clock in the morning until 5 o'clock in the evening. And in the afternoon, that's when they could take electives, and they were able to study things like African martial arts, jewelry making, tie-dyeing, different things like that, different fun activities.
Wow.
So,
that is so great. So what you were able to do is you incorporated the whole African culture and kind of skewed the curriculum to include what was necessary for the educators, but coming from an African perspective.
Yes.
In the classroom. That is awesome.
Yes.
That is awesome. Thank you for doing that. You know, as I listen to you and listen to what you're, you know, even just your insight and your perspective, I'm drawn to want to attend your classes. And I mean, as an educator, that's what you want to be able to do, is to inspire and to have the children or whoever is in your classroom excited and looking forward to being educated in that particular perspective. And, of course, me learning my own culture, I'm always going to be interested about that. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's always something there for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Nice. When we have some callers on the line, and I just want to check in with people to see if they have any questions or comments.
And I'd actually like to bring in, we also have another teacher from Virginia, Ms. Althea Donnelly, who is in the Virginia school system, and she's been teaching, from what I understand, first grade in kindergarten. And is now just moved into third grade, and she's got some interesting perspective. So I want to make sure that she's included and can participate in this conversation as well.
Awesome. For our listeners, you're listening to the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we have Ms. Greta Chamberlain and some other phenomenal people who are waiting to jump into this conversation. But these are educators who've taken innovative and new approaches to teaching our youth and are standing inside of the Declaration empowering our youth. I'm going to open up the mic for 757-969. Are you there?
Hello.
Yes.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi.
Welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the call tonight. And I was listening to Sister Greta,
and
it would have been so exciting to be a teacher right along with her, just listening to all the things that she's done and the way she's been with the children. It's really along the lines of what I've been looking for. I've been teaching. I'm a native New Yorker, and I've lived in Virginia for seven years, almost 8 years. And I didn't teach in New York. I got my bachelor's degree. This is my second career. So I come from corporate, and I always wanted to teach. And being a product of the 60s, a teen in the 60s, and with Malcolm X and the Black Panthers and, you know, Dr. King, but mostly Malcolm X and the Black Panthers. I was more on their side. I mean, I love Dr. King, but I was more, at that time, a little more militant. And now going into the school system in Virginia and working with kindergarten and first grade, I got to see that there's so much about our culture that they don't know, that they have no clue as to who they are. And so for me, teaching, even though the curriculum is a particular way, my goal is and what my vision is to have them realize who they are. And most of the children I teach are African American. I have a couple of white students, but for the most part, the school is I would say it's about 90% black African American. So my kindergartners and first graders are really not, they have no clue as to who they are. So I try to incorporate whenever in the curriculum, it's not in there. I mean, our culture, our history is really not in the curriculum. I have gotten teachers on the bandwagon to have us do Kwanzaa celebration during, you know, around Christmas time. So we do Kwanzaa, Christmas, and Hanukkah. We just bring all that in. And then I also have them do, bring them on the bandwagon, like for Black History Month. I mean, I teach the children about Black history all through the school year, along with what I'm supposed to teach them in history. And they have some black, of course they have Dr. King and Rosa Parks, but they don't have the ones that really, that I feel the children really need to know. So I've brought in, and the other teachers have gone in with me, that in Black History Month, I give each child a famous black person to look up. They do it with their parents. I send a letter home. They do it with their parents. And the parents have come back and thanked me that they didn't even know some of the important people in our history. They had no idea. And I bring in ancestors. I bring in present-day people. I bring in, you know, just people that I think are important for the children to know. And the students, the boys and girls that I work with, they it's a challenge. It really is a challenge because the parents expect me to do all the, they have their children from 0 to 5, but they expect me to do all the teaching of their social skills, teaching of their, besides the ABCs, teaching of the discipline, their discipline, that they, how they should be at home. So it's really a challenge for me to be able to get the children to really learn what they need to learn, because first they need to learn why they're in school, and they don't really have that. They don't really have that why they're in school. They have no clue as to what school is all about. And I also have them look at what they want to be when they grow up. You know, we have that conversation. And, you know, some of them have said to me they want to work in McDonald's, or they want to work in, you know, it's usually a fast food place. And I said, okay, that's fine. You can work there while you're going to college. And I have to explain to them about college. So there's a lot of conversations that I have with them, and I show them videos, and I show movies. We have big screens in our school. We're a Title I school. What Title I means that we're funded by we get extra funding from the school system, from the government, for low socioeconomic areas. And so we get a lot of stuff that they don't get in other schools. And I just have to constantly have a conversation with them, constant conversation about who they are, proud of who you are, to know your culture, to know where you're from. And it really is a lot of work, and it's a huge challenge.
Well, you know, the thing I want to thank both you and Sister Greta is for standing for our young people. You know, I'm clear in your speaking that both of you have a vision of empowerment, and you're looking to have them get themselves the possibility of who they can be and not settle for what television or even the people around them say they're going to be. You're actually providing them with a vision and an opportunity to see themselves bigger than they see themselves. So I just want to thank you for both for the work that you've been doing. We're having the same kind of conversation in the International Black Summit. We're about having people be empowered and inspired by who they are and what they're up to and what their culture is. And it's so important for our young people, our young minds, our minds of the future to be involved in that conversation. So I want to thank the two of you and acknowledge the work, because I know that it's not easy. I know that it can be frustrating at times, and the joy and the possibility of what you do, sometimes you don't even get the final results back, the feedback from the youth, you know, from time to time. So I just want to acknowledge and thank you for the work that you've been doing. This is an International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we're having a great conversation tonight on education, the education system, and acknowledging some of the leaders and the pioneers that are out there working with our young people to make their vision possible. Back to you, Claire.
Awesome. We have a caller at 504-309 who, do you have a question or a comment for our guest?
Now, Henrietta, you should know this voice from New Orleans, from Katrinaville.
This is Clara.
I'm sorry, Clara. So sorry, Mayor Cooper. Like
but,
you said, my fault, my bad.
You compare
but I'm
me
from,
to a really phenomenal woman, so that's okay. Who
okay.
am I speaking with?
Mr. Martinez from New Orleans, Louisiana, from the Martinez Kindergarten School, the first black kindergarten school in the state of Louisiana.
Welcome, welcome.
Thanks
welcome, for joining
welcome.
Me. And Chakasha is responsible for the Black Summit High School students to come down in New Orleans 2006, August, to help get out the school buildings because of Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And Henrietta told me I better get on the program tonight or else, so here I am. I don't want nobody to crucify me because I got enough crucifixion going on down here in Katrinaville.
Yes, sir,
but
yes,
as I was listening to your speakers, I, too, got something to add. I just had a stroke, so excuse my French. Sometimes, you know, I'll be with it, and sometimes I just drift off. But I had, the school was my mother's school, the Martinez Kindergarten School of New Orleans. And also, it's a privately owned family business back then. I was born into the family. I'm the baby. My brother, Dr. Martinez, teaches at UNC. He's in the, what you call it, the University of North Carolina in Black Studies over there in Wilmington Beach, North Carolina. My sister taught, she's the second child. She has a Master's Plus 30 from the University of Oxford, England. And I got my master's from Xavier University of New Orleans in elementary school principalship. So we all are educators in the family. From daddy, mama, and everybody, the whole tribe, like you said, the whole kit and caboodle are educated. But when I got drafted to go to Vietnam, this is what my statement is. I went overseas, and I did my tour of duty in Vietnam. There was signs in the jungle, black signs with white writing, and the N-word was written on those signs, go home, N. And I looked around, and I said, well, God, dog, you know, why would the Vietnamese say that about the black man?
Right, right.
Well, you know, it dawned me, it's all get down, like we all in the same battle, we all in the same uniform, we all fighting for the red, white, and blue. But as soon as we got out the war, you go your way, and I'll go white my way, white boy. So that was the thing that blew my mind. So we were all, you know, brothers in arms. We watch each other's back. We fought for each other's survival. But when we get back to the States, you go your way, I go mine. So my point is, when I got back to New Orleans, I went back to Xavier, got my undergraduate degree, not in secondary, like Mama wanted me to do. I got back down to elementary school because I knew her time was short. I had to go and get some credits in elementary schools to take over the kindergarten school, and that blew the minds of the registrar's office, and they was all saying, Numa, you sure you want to go down to elementary school? Look, I can't take them big orangutans up there in high school. I'd rather go down there to the little baby ones. Go down to the little baby ones. Excuse my French, and. Teach the babies so when they get big, they could be smarter than the so-called blue-eyed soul devil.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. I went back to Xavier, got my undergraduate degree, and later when she died, I had to go back to Xavier to get a master's degree in principalship of education. And I finished Xavier in 96 with a 3.88 average, And I still got the complaint because the kids in graduate school did not know how to study. And the professor said, Mr. Martinez, would you take over my class for 2 weeks because I got to go on this seminar that's mandatory. So I went in there with blue jeans, brogans, and a T-shirt into our class. And those kids learned more from what I taught than what the regular teacher would teach because they were not taught how to study.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
there's three letters in this whole wide world, people. P-I-E. Not American pie, not Brazilian pie, but P-I-E. Plan, implement, evaluation. That's it.
Okay.
That's the key for the whole world. That's the key for the stock markets, the everything, the NASDAQ, whatever you want to call it. Even when you're thinking about doing something at your house. Shall I cut the grass today? Shall I go get the gas for the car? Shall I make apple pie? Shall I cook gumbo, like they say down here in New Orleans, you know? You know, down here in New Orleans. Shall we make the levees big enough so the people don't drown no more? Shall we? We gotta think about what we're gonna do. And I can't stress this enough to the kids at Xavier when I go up there and you know, when they call me up say come substitute for one or two classes, I say, fine. So when I leave from Xavier, I feel like I've touched a few lives so that anything you do in life, you first think about it. First, how can I color that ribbon red? I got to get some red paint or some red crayon. You think about it. You plan your attack. You plan your mission. Then when you got all your equipment, all your material together, then you implement it. Now, how can I get this truck across that bridge if this bridge is not going to hold a 4-ton truck but a 2-ton truck? I got to make sure this bridge is strong enough for me to get across this river, Mississippi River Bridge. So, boom, I make this bridge 4 tons capacity to hold this truck. Then when the truck gets across the river, if the bridge didn't go down, if the red color didn't fade out, then you evaluate your progress, your mission as it went down. Plan, implement, and evaluation. That makes the world go around. Just like Saddam Hussein, just like Bin Laden. This boy here, Bin Laden, he knows what he's going to do. They got an alert down here in New Orleans about the oil refineries because they now are targeting the soft targets, the terrorists. And everybody down here are scared out of their heads about if we're going to get blown up by, you know, Bin Laden and all that. I said, man, look, we got enough weapon where we can take Bin Laden and send him back to wherever he come from, but yet let him come to them bayous and swamps of Louisiana, the wild cages going to grab
the alligators.
The alligators. So we're not worried about him. We're not worried about Taliban. We're not worried about nothing else that they're going to throw over here, you know, because if they come to them swamps and the alligators and bayous, Hey, my share, go get him. Hey, go get him and put him in the gumbo pot. You know, stew him up with some jambalaya. And
so the Martinez approach for
PIE
for the education and
my issue is not only teach English in the elementary school and the primary the pre-K school, because when I taught at the kindergarten school for 37 years, in the kindergarten school, I just had to retire when Katrina hit. That's 5 years ago. So I've been out of work 5 years ago. I took a stroke last year. So now I'm disabled, but I still got my master's. I still got my full faculties. But these kids will see me in the supermarket, in Home Depot. Hey, Mr. Martinez, they be speaking Japanese or French or Spanish or English to me, and the cashier registers, you know, they'd be looking at me, Mr. Martinez, what did that girl say? Well, she said good morning in Japanese, or she said how are you doing in Japanese, or how are you doing in French, or how are you doing in Spanish. And when they speak the Spanish to me, the Chicanos, the Mexicans, the Tex-Mexicans look around in amazement to see a little black girl who's in the 7th grade or in the 6th grade or in the 5th grade, speak their language.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, why not be multifaceted, bilingual in all the languages?
Right.
If it wasn't for Uncle Sam sending me to Vietnam, I would never learn Vietnamese, which is a little form of Creole French down here in Louisiana with these Cajuns, and getting wounded and sent to Japan to get healed up. I wouldn't have learned how to speak acquired Japanese. But I was so bad that my parents sent me to Nicaragua for 2 years in the boarding school. So when I came back from the boarding school, I had Spanish underneath my belt. Then Uncle Sam said, give me them books, take this here gun, go fight for your country. And that led me to acquire Japanese and Vietnamese together. So when the Vietnamese in the restaurant be speaking Vietnamese, and I tell them something like Didi Mao or Lung Dak To, whatever, they gawk back and they say, well, how come you know how to speak my language and you're American? Well, what can I say? But my kids, all of my kids, and it made me so happy. Ooh, it's made me so happy. Not to ramble on, but this year, in the month of May, I got two invitations to go to Princeton University graduation. Two of my former male students got their doctorate degree in law, and I couldn't go. Man. I couldn't go. I cried, but I sent those guys at least $50 to check. Split it down the middle for the two boys to have some fun on me. And they wanted me to make that graduate. I couldn't make it.
Yeah.
You know, and right now I'm fighting this stroke, and I'm fighting to reopen the Martinez Kindergarten School. But this time I will not be able to teach all these years of experience I got crammed up in my head. I will let some other teachers who work at these charter schools in New Orleans come in and open up a GED academy to catch those who fall through the cracks of the system.
Gotcha.
And they will run the school from 8 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the evening with after-school care. So if anybody want to help us out down here in Katrinaville, just give me a shout. I'm on Facebook, Numa J. Martinez at Facebook.com. That's
awesome.
The best way I could do it.
Awesome. Well, we have about 10 minutes left in the show. We still haven't gotten to the oxygen room, and we have one other caller, and I just want to check in those two places to see if there are any comments there. So I'm going to open the mic of the oxygen room. Jerry, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How's everybody doing tonight? Enjoying the show. Does anybody want to make a comment?
I think I thought that enough.
Jerry, first of all, this is Henrietta, if you used an access number, you're in the oxygen room. So that's...
Oh, we're live on air, Henrietta. You got a comment for us, sweetheart? All of your guests are here.
I know, but there are people in the oxygen room who don't know they're in the oxygen room.
Oh, gotcha.
We just gave out the number.
Gotcha. Okay. Is there something
okay,
that...
And I know there's some teachers in that room, in the oxygen room. So that's why I was saying, if anybody used an access number, you know, if you call the 218 number,
right,
and
you
use the access code to get in, and you have a question, Jerry, that's what Jerry's asking for now. If anybody who called that number has a question
or a comment.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, sweetie. Area code 724-339. You're live on the air. Do you have a question or a comment? Something you'd like to share? Okay, so I guess we're just listening. Well, I would like to just acknowledge all of the educators tonight, Mr. Martinez, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ms. Althea, Ms. Greta, again, for K taking on the capacity of educator. It's a very, very important role. And also the different unique perspectives that each of you brought to it. You know, Ms. Greta from the cultural perspective, bringing over African tradition and African ways of doing things to a Eurocentric perspective. Mr. Martinez bringing in the international perspective, you know, from your travels and your adventures. And Ms. Alcia, you know, just representing Black culture in a space where it was absent. You know, all of those are really phenomenal ways and innovative, because we're taught to follow a particular curriculum. And what I'm really pleased to hear about this evening is that each of you has brought your own special way and integrated it into the system, such that our youth get a different perspective on, as Glenn said, who they can be in the world, and a different way of learning, you know, learning about themselves and learning about our history, and I think that's pretty phenomenal. So we have about 5 minutes. I'm going to ask if either of you have any last-minute comments, and if you could limit them to 2 minutes, that would be great.
Am I still on? This is Althea.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing that I just wanted to say is that our children come to us with so many issues and so many problems and things that go on in their communities that it hinders them in some way. And to break through that, to be able to break through that, because they can learn. The kids are really great, great kids. And when you can get past all the stuff that they bring and bring something else to them, that's when they start to really open up and they learn and they want to learn. And they, no matter what's going on in their life, they're excited to come to school, because they know when they come to school, they're going to see me, they're going to get, or whoever is bringing what we bring to the table, they know that they're going to get something that they don't ordinarily get, and they're excited about coming to school. And that's the thing that excites me, when they're excited to come to school, and when they and they come back to me, and they continue to come back to me. And now I'm in third grade, and the third graders are you know, starting to get excited. They looked at me like I was crazy at first, and now they're really starting to come to school every day. I have 100% attendance all the time, and that's the thing that really excites me and turns me on about teaching at this late state in my life.
Thank you.
I'd like to say that, well, I enjoyed listening to the guest speakers as well. But one thing I'd like to get across to people is that it's very important for our children to know who they really are and their ancestry, because that's a foundation for us. When they have that foundation and they recognize who they are, then they can move forward when they know they come from a great people who have done many things to contribute to a global society. And for us to recognize that on many occasions, that even still today, 2010, when you open up a textbook, that they focus in on slavery, and that's basically it. That's the main thing. You were a slave. Instead of telling us, well, what did we have prior to slavery? We read a whole section with my kids about the Olmecs, and I asked them, now tell me, who are these people? Nowhere in the book, they praise the Olmecs, but nowhere in that book did they say they were of an African people. So we are still being left out of history, and that means that what's happening to our children in the educational system throughout this country is that there's a genocide of the minds of our kids. Mm-hmm. And I think that every teacher, regardless of ethnicity, because there are a lot of teachers that I've worked with who are Caucasian, and they fought just as much as I did to bring African-centeredness to the children. But it's very important for Hispanic children, for children, quote-unquote, who they consider to be, meaning the Caucasian society, relates to us as a minority, and we are by no means a minority. And even just by telling us we are a minority, what is that saying? It's a subliminal message for us. So I'd just like to end by saying that we must fight for the lives and the minds of our children continuously.
Dr. Martin, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to say this. I'm going to quote my mother. Since she instilled in my mind her teaching methods were that of the Jewish method, the Montessori method, and the German method. And the word kindergarten, for those who may not know, because I'm a studier of languages, the word kindergarten means children of the garden, for those educators out there who may not know. And some that do know. And my brother, Dr. Maurice Martinez, Jr., like I said, UNC, he did the first black history documentary on the Mardi Gras Indians of New Orleans in 1983 with the ABC film crew. But my mother always used to say, boy, love the life you live and live the life you love. Teaching is not a monetary gain, make $1 million from teaching. No, your reward is helping that young mind develop into a productive citizen of society. Mm-hmm. That's all I got to say.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Glenn, any closing remarks before we, we've got about 3 minutes.
Well, I just wanted to, again, acknowledge the leaders, the educators who are in front of our young people, thank you for the dedication, the love, and the fulfillment that you provided. And actually, you've inspired me tonight. So I just want to be, I want to point that out and be clear that there's some things that I can now go back and look at and think about for my future and for my history as well. The other thing is that these conversations are consistent with who we are and what we're about for the International Black Summit, and that's why we're here on the show tonight. And I just want to acknowledge and thank this conversation. This is a powerful conversation because when I can get who I am, then the people around me can get who I am, and they can get themselves out of who I'm being. And so I'm clear that you as educators are doing that, and I thank you for that, and I honor the work that you're doing, and thank you for being the pioneers that you are. Back to you, Claire.
All right.
Ashe, thank you for that. I'd like to invite our listeners and our guests to join us in the Oxygen Room. That's the show after the show. It is off air, and that number is 218-862-6420, and the access code is 797-4834-pound. Again, that number is 218-862-6420, and access code 797-4834-pound. I'd also like to thank our guests for tonight's show. For our listeners, you've been listening to the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and I would like to invite you to attend our annual event the first weekend in August, and that's the time when folks from all around the world gather to share their lives, to tune up their listening to what life is giving, and to engage in the process of expressing or transforming who they are in the world. Come back, join us again next week. We air every Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It has truly been a pleasure. I want to thank all of the IBS Talk Show team members, everyone who listened, people who were chatting online, and everybody who called in to share tonight. You can listen to any previous shows 24/7 online at our website, www.blacksummit.com. www.thebeckmanshow.org, and you can download any of our previous shows as well. Thank you again. My name is Clara Lyons Devon, and my co-host is Mr. Glenn Grimmage, and I invite you to show up powerfully in your life and share the special gift that God gave only to you. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Peace and blessings.
All right, Glenn.